This is Captain Rick reporting. I'm back after a long sabbatical. I hope that you are all doing as well as you can. I'll be reading from the Wednesday, August 19th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. The first article is entitled, Gas Fumes in Sewer Pose Temporary Explosion Risk. Decatur. A potentially dangerous situation was safely resolved Monday after an employee of the sanitary district of Decatur detected a strong odor of gasoline in the Lakeshore Drive pump station. Kent Newton, interim executive director of the district, said the Decatur Fire Department was called because of the potential for an explosion caused by gasoline vapors. Firefighters ventilated the pump station and the vapors dissipated to safe levels. Newton said he suspects someone dumped gasoline down a drain and into the sewer system because there were no reports of a major gas spill. He said as the gasoline made its way to the pump station, the vapors were trapped there. The gasoline itself posed little threat to the sewer system or the treatment plant. Newton said the gasoline would be diluted by the time it reached the plant. Newton said the district was going to try and determine where the contamination was from, so the person responsible can pay for the cost of cleanup. He said anyone with information concerning the incident should call the district at 217-422-6931. The next article is entitled, Gill Plotting Another Bid for Congress. Springfield. A Bloomington doctor says he is launching another bid for Congress, but not as a Democrat this time around. David Gill, who has sought to represent Central Illinois in the nation's capital four previous times, beginning a decade ago, announced Tuesday he will be making an independent bid in 2016 for the 13th Congressional District post. Within what amounts to a one-party system, most American citizens have been without a true voice in Washington for a long time. We deserve much better, the 55-year-old emergency room physician said in a prepared statement. If he collects enough signatures to qualify for the November 2016 ballot, and he'll need an estimated 15,000 registered voters, Gill is likely to face off against incumbent U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, a second-term Republican from Taylorville. No Democrat has stepped forward to challenge Davis. Gill last ran for the seat in 2012 and lost by 1,002 votes to Davis. That deeply contentious race generated nearly $9 million in spending from candidates, parties, and interest groups. Gill also lost three prior bids to Congress to former U.S. Representative Tim Johnson of Urbana. He stepped aside in 2014 when the Democratic Party coalesced behind former Madison County Chief Judge Ann Callis. Gill also served as an assistant director of the Illinois Department of Public Health under former Governor Pat Quinn. Our polling demonstrates that my independent campaign will be highly competitive in spite of the obstacles built into the system by the two major parties, Gill said. The next article is entitled Taking a Step Up, Rand Toul. With all the attention placed on building a heavily armed protective wall around quarterback Wes Lunt, there's another Illini skill position player who may be just as valuable. That's running back Josh Ferguson, who enters his senior season as Illinois' most versatile and electrifying playmaker. Ferguson is one of three FBS players with 1,500 career rushing yards and 1,000 receiving yards. He's the Illinois record holder for career receptions, 131, by a running back. Not only is he ticketed to be the centerpiece of Illinois' running game, he's a candidate to be moved into the slot to play Illinois, a playmaking receiver, now that Mike Dudek is out with a knee injury. The next article is entitled, No Races Today. Impasse brings change to Governor's Day. Springfield. Along with forcing the cancellation of at least one political fundraiser, the state's budget impasse has created another odd wrinkle for Illinois politicians. A group of Republican office holders had scheduled a day at the races as part of Governor's Day activities at the fair today. The event, hosted by Comptroller Leslie Munger, U.S. Senator Mark Kirk, and a handful of other Republicans, is set to occur at the grandstand where harness racing takes place. There is one big problem, however. Due to budget constraints, there is no horse racing today. State Representative Tim Butler, a Springfield Republican who is co-hosting the event, said the plan was to carry on a tradition launched by the late Comptroller Judy Barr Topinka. When this year's gala was put together, organizers were unaware racing would be canceled because of the stalemate that has left Illinois without a budget for nearly 8 weeks. We're calling it a day at the races without horses, Butler said. The scheduling glitch is just one more example of how the political gridlock is affecting longtime traditions. In addition to the normal stump speeches, and picnic surrounding Governor Bruce Rauner's first Governor's Day, the Illinois Senate is set to gavel in what could be a lengthy afternoon session. After spending much of the day at the fair, including playing host at a reception at Champaign County GOP headquarters, senators such as State Senator Bill Brady of Bloomington will have to kick off their fair shoes and dust off their suits for a 3 p.m. committee hearing, followed by the 4 p.m. full session. I'm going to have to find a place to change, Brady said Tuesday. The biggest issue on the agenda is the possible override of Rauner's veto of legislation that would bar the state's largest employee union from going on strike or being locked out, having a final contract agreement in the hands of an independent arbitrator. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union is pushing for the override as part of some tough negotiations with the governor on the new contract. The union's collective bargaining agreement expired July 1st, and the two sides have been unable to reach an agreement over wages, health insurance, and other significant changes Rahner is seeking to make. Rahner took a break from the fair Tuesday to visit the Capitol press room, where he told reporters the measure would strip him of one of his most important powers. Financial decisions of that magnitude should be decided at the bargaining table or by elected officials, not unelected labor arbitrators, Rahner wrote in a letter to lawmakers. The Senate also is poised to act on a plan to fund the state's monetary award program, which provides tuition assistance to low-income college students. With the fall semester getting underway this month, as many as 125,000 college students could start the year in economic limbo. If we want to ensure we are giving students the opportunity to receive an education that will lead to a good-paying job, then we need to fund this program, said State Senator Gary Forbee, Democrat, Benton. The session could stretch into the evening as the Democrat-controlled chamber votes to spend $5.2 billion in federal funds and six other veto overrides. While the Senate is in session, other events will be taking place, including an event hosted by State Senator Andy Menar, Democrat, Bunker Hill, at a farm south of Springfield. Menar has been planning a fundraiser, but dialed it back to a free event because of a state law barring fundraisers from occurring on days when the legislature is in session. The next article is entitled, Decatur Man Facing Domestic Battery Charges in Two Incidents. Decatur. A woman reported to police that Harry L. Hendricks battered her, choked her, and threatened to kill her during incidents that occurred at her home outside Southside August 5th and 12th. Shortly after the second incident, Hendricks, 45, was arrested and booked into the Macon County Jail, where he is being held on $34,000 bond. In the earlier event, the victim told police, Harry struck her at least three times in the face and head with his fists, said an affidavit by Decatur Police Officer Ryan Wicks. She sustained several visible bruises to her cheeks and chin. Hendricks, who was not on the scene when police arrived, was placed on the department's wanted list. About 9:30 p.m. August 12th, police were once again dispatched to the woman's residence. She reported that Hendricks slapped her in the face twice with an open palm and then jumped on top of her on the couch, holding her down, Wickens wrote in a second affidavit. Hendricks told her he will kill her and began choking her by placing both of his hands around her neck and applying pressure that was restricting her flow of oxygen. She was unable to breathe while Hendricks had his hands around her neck. The woman subsequently struggled with Hendricks over control of her phone. During that struggle, her finger was broken, the victim told police. Officers observed that the fractured bone appeared to be out of place. Injuries sustained during this incident included abrasions and swelling on the right side of her face, a laceration on the underside of her lip, and redness around both sides of her neck. Hendricks was arraigned Tuesday in circuit court on 2 felony counts of aggravated domestic battery, 1 count of unlawful restraint, and a misdemeanor count of domestic battery. He is due in court September 2nd for his preliminary hearing. The next article is entitled, Boy 10 Injured in Crash. A two-vehicle accident late Monday night sent a 10-year-old boy to St. Louis Children's Hospital with life-threatening injuries. The Sangamon County Sheriff's Office is still investigating the crash that occurred at the intersection of Mechanicsburg-Iliopolis Road and Mount Auburn Road in rural Iliopolis. The investigation indicated the driver of a pickup truck, headed westbound, struck the rear of a lawn tractor pulling a trailer. The 10-year-old was driving the lawn tractor, while a 25-year-old male from Iliopolis was also on the trailer, though he apparently jumped from the trailer prior to impact. He was not seriously injured. The 20-year-old male from Buffalo, who was driving the pickup truck, was unhurt. The next article is entitled, Fall Kills Mulberry Grove Man. Vandalia. A 67-year-old rural Mulberry Grove man died Tuesday when he fell from a scaffold he was working on. Fayette County Coroner Bruce Bowen said James Hickman was working on a house about 28 feet above a concrete patio when he lost his balance and fell about 4:30 p.m. Hickman was pronounced dead at the scene. The accident remains under investigation by the Fayette County Coroner. An autopsy is scheduled today at St. Anthony Memorial Hospital in Effingham. The next article is entitled, Runner Mum on Presidential Pick. Springfield. Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner is not weighing in on the crowded space for president, yet. During a swing through the State House press room Tuesday, the first-time Republican chief executive said he is not getting involved in picking one of the 17 candidates seeking the GOP nomination. I am very, very clearly, specifically staying out of that, Rauner told reporters before heading out to the Illinois State Fair. Rauner did say he's familiar with a big chunk of the field, including former Governor Jeb Bush, Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. I have 6 pretty good personal friends running in the Republican primary, Rauner said. I'm pretty close to virtually all of the governors. I've worked with Jeb on education reform. I've worked with Scott, Bobby Jindal. I've worked with many of them, the governor said. Rauner also spent time on the campaign trail last year with New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. As chairman of the Republican Governors Association, Christie made numerous visits to the land of Lincoln during Rauner's successful 2014 bid for governor. Federal election records show Rauner contributed money to a variety of GOP presidential contenders in previous elections. In 2007, for example, he gave Mitt Romney $2,300. Rauner later gave GOP nominee John McCain $50,000. In the 2012 presidential cycle, Rahner gave money to former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty and former Utah Governor John Huntsman. The next article is entitled, Jalen C. Mays Arrested in Andre Brown Shooting Death, Decatur. Jalen C. Mays, 19, was arrested Friday afternoon on a preliminary charge of involuntary manslaughter for the shooting death the previous night of the 17-year-old Andre Brown. Mays is being held in the Macon County Jail on $250,000 bond. The charge, involuntary manslaughter, is a Class 3 felony punishable by 2 to 5 years in prison or probation. Prosecutors are considering what charges will be filed, including a possibility of more serious charges. Mays, who has no felony convictions, will be arraigned in circuit court by Friday. In a police interview, Mays said that he pulled out a handgun, which he had found about a week earlier, while standing on a porch on the 200 block of West Packard Street. Mays said that just before the gun went off, he had removed the clip from the weapon. Mays stated there was a bullet in the clip, but he didn't know it was there. But he didn't know if there was one in the chamber of the gun, said an affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Charles Hendricks. He then inserted the clip back into the gun and it accidentally fired one time, the affidavit said. The bullet struck Brown in the chest while they stood only a few feet apart. Mays stated that the shooting of Brown was accidental, and at no time did he intend to shoot Brown, Hendricks wrote in his statement. The shooting occurred at about 9:45 p.m. Thursday, after police began investigating the incident. They received information that Mays accidentally shot Brown, while Mays was playing with a gun. He was taken into custody on an arrest warrant that was issued in December when Mays failed to appear in court in an unrelated case. This story will be updated. The next article is entitled, Duckworth Puts Families First, Bloomington. U.S. Representative Tammy Duckworth says she will continue to fight for working families as she continues her campaign for the U.S. Senate seat in next year's election. The congresswoman, who was a featured speaker for the McLean County Democratic dinner on Sunday night at the Chateau in Bloomington. We have to work for working families across the state and making sure that our elected politicians are held accountable, she said. Duckworth from Hoffman Estates is in her second term in Congress. She was working towards a PhD in political science at Northern Illinois University when she was deployed to Iraq in 2004. She lost her right leg near her hip and her left leg below her knee from injuries sustained in 2004 when the UH-60 Black Hawk helicopter she was co-piloting was hit by a rocket-propelled grenade fired by Iraqi insurgents. Following her recovery from the injuries, she ran for office in 2006, and after losing to Republican Peter Roskam for the Illinois 6th congressional seat in 2006, She was named director of the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs. She was named by President Barack Obama as the Assistant Secretary of Veterans Affairs in 2009. She won her current seat in 2012. In March, she announced she would challenge U.S. Representative Mark Kirk. When I was in high school, we were on food stamps, and had it not been for good public schools, and had it not been for school lunch and school breakfast programs, there would probably have been days I wouldn't have had food. She overcame those obstacles, attended college, and then joined the Army. I would never have been ready to be a helicopter pilot if it wasn't for being able to finish high school, she said. My parents did everything they could to help me finish high school and get ready for college. That is what I am fighting for, working families across the state. Duckworth said she is spending much of her time reviewing the Iran nuclear deal. We have about 45 days left before we take the vote, and I am going to take my time in reviewing the whole thing, she said. I will review every single page of it, and I have real concerns. I don't trust Iran, and I want any potential deal to be verifiable and also one that protects American interests. The next article is entitled, Run for Allen. No, Run for Fallen. I'm sorry, that article is old. I'll be right back with another. Here's a new one. The next article is entitled, Milliken Freshmen Move into Dorms as Fall Semester Looms Ahead. Decatur. Milliken University's official freshman move-in day, Tuesday, may have been the most low-key ever, but it still made history. That's because the newly reopened Aston Hall, a women's dormitory, from the time it opened in the fall of 1907 until it closed in the spring of 2008, is finding new life as a male domain. Greg Swappy of Fishers, Indiana, who moved into Ashton with help from his parents, said he liked its central location. His mother, Georgia Schwappe, also noted the dormitory's proximity to Richards Treat University Center and Warnick Dining Room. It's close to the food, she said. That's important for boys. That was about as exciting as it got Tuesday, as about 100 freshmen moved into residence halls 6 days before the fall semester begins Monday. That's fewer than half the number who moved in 1 year ago, continuing a trend Milliken began 2 years ago to repopulate the campus more gradually. It also reflects a smaller freshman class. Dean of Admissions Kevin McIntyre reported an enrollment of 424 freshmen Tuesday, compared to 486 1 year ago. He added that the number of transfer students is up, however, standing at 129 compared to 119 last year and 92 2 years ago. Reopening Ashton Hall and upgrading it was joined over the summer by improvements to Blackburn, Dotson, and Weck residence halls in preparation for demolition this fall of Mills Hall, and then Hessler Hall. The former women's hall was given the name Ashton Hall in 1909, 2 years after it opened, to honor Anna B. Milliken, widow of university founder James Milliken. And that's the end of part one of the Wednesday, August 19th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. I'll be back with part two after the break.